ER Oshkosh, and WGBW 1590 AM Denmark, W250 CV Green Bay.
ABC News, I'm Dave Packer. In Turkey and Syria, the rescue effort after that massive earthquake turns to recovery as the death toll rises to more than 25,000. A second object in less than a week shot down by U.S. Air Force jets. This one was traveling over Alaska, ordered down by President Biden. It comes after a Chinese spy balloon was downed after transiting the U.S. The entire city of Flint, Michigan, under a boil water advisory after a water main failed. Crews working on a fix, but Mayor Sheldon Neely says estimates show the boil water advisory won't be lifted until Monday at the earliest.
We're going to maintain our testing to maintain the level of quality of water. We want people to have a level of comfort with this as we go through this process.
Flint has been rebuilding its water infrastructure since lead was found in the supply less than a decade ago. The state of emergency in Nevada after a pipeline leak in California shut down a major gasoline supplier to the Las Vegas area. The operator says that leak has now been found. Gasoline to start flowing this afternoon. This is ABC News. The Los Angeles Fire Department responding after an American Airlines plane and a shuttle bus collided. Officials say the plane was being towed when it swiped the bus. The bus driver and two passengers were all taken to the hospital in moderate to fair condition. No passengers were on the aircraft at the time. Another tribute to Tyre Nichols in Memphis, Tennessee. At a ceremony Friday, the Hyde Family Foundation and the Memphis River Parks Partnership naming a canopy in honor of Nichols at Tom Lee Park, which sits along the river. In attendance Friday, Nichols' mother and stepfather, who both signed the first wooden roof slat of the canopy before it was drilled into place, Rovon Wells spoke briefly.
I know he's smiling down right now, and he's just jumping up for joy. I'm going to miss him so much.
Nichols died last month after being beaten by Memphis officers in a case that triggered nationwide protests against police brutality. Dave Packer, ABC News.
Hey, Fox Valley, if you've got a favorite supper club, we're your station, Civic Media.
This is Civic Media News. I'm Terry Bell. February is Black History Month. The CDC says older Black Americans are about twice as likely as whites to have Alzheimer's disease and other forms of dementia. Here's Mike Moen now with more on how Wisconsin scientists are trying to help.
As drugs designed to treat conditions accelerate towards the market, the University of Wisconsin School of Medicine and Public Health notes Black adults are less likely to be included in the research. The school has made it a priority to focus on this population in an ongoing study. Diane Beckley-Milner of the Alzheimer's Association Wisconsin chapter says participation is important.
Without us being involved in those clinical trials as Black Americans, then the research, it's not going to lend itself to giving accurate information.
The university acknowledges Black individuals can be reluctant to participate in studies, citing historical trauma from events such as the Tuskegee experiment. Officials say when it comes to the UW study, Black volunteers account for 27% of the people enrolled, which is much higher than the state's Black population, suggesting that provides hope in boosting research inclusivity. And Milner says partnerships her group has with organizations such as the African Methodist Episcopal Church can help ease fears and create more awareness within the Black community.
Having that partnership has proved to be very, very important and critical to making sure that people get information that they can trust.
She adds that a common challenge her group has found in outreach is that many Black Americans view cognitive decline as simply a sign of aging and not a disease. The association also works with nursing organizations in hopes of educating more people within the Black population. Mike Moen, Wisconsin News Connection.
And you're listening to Civic Media News. I'm Terry Bell.
Hey everybody, how we doing? I'm Charlie Behrens, inviting you to join me Saturdays and or Sundays at noon. It's a horse apiece, whatever you decide. We're doing the Cripescast, where we talk to people for and or from the Midwest, and it's more fun than a six-pack of Jolly Good. Okay, the pride of Random Lake, that Jolly Good is. Anyway, it's on your Civic Media station and the Civic Media app. And do me a favor, yeah, tell your folks I says hi. Okay, real good.
the devil's advocates.
Mitch McConnell did make a public statement, right? After he voted to acquit.
No, nothing says the president can't be prosecuted.
Set the example for your caucus.
Convince your caucus as to why the man is not fit to serve. How do you not use your leadership and say, you guys, this is crazy. We can't do this, and here is exactly why. Because now of the two major political parties, one of them is under the thumb of a fascist insurrectionist.
Follow the Devil's Advocates on Facebook and Twitter.
I'm looking at the phone lines. I'm seeing some familiar faces. What's your mind, Gina Beauclair?
Well, welcome back, Matt. I really missed you. We've been missing getting woke every morning, but now we'll get woke in the afternoon.
What's your mind, Andrew of Detroit?
Professor, it's so nice you're back. We missed you during your vacation, and I'm very happy to be in your class for the semester.
Thanks a lot for calling in. I appreciate all my callers.
Tune in to Matt Flynn Direct, Monday through Friday, 3 to 4 p.m.
Looking for more local programming? Check out our website, civicmedia.us, to see our entire lineup. You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media. To learn more, go to our website, civicmedia.us.
Really simple application, but then at the bottom it's going to say, it's required, so you have to put something.
Oh. Cool.
You do have to put something, so why not put As Goes Wisconsin?
Even though Brian Kelly, who's coming up next on Dueling Tangents with Luke Mathers, did mention yesterday that his life was potentially in harm's way.
I know, and I love Brian, and I'll miss Brian, but...
Moving Wisconsin forward, one joke at a time, this is Kristen Bry with As Goes Wisconsin.
Yada, yada, yada.
Hello, Wisconsin!
Hello, Wisconsin. Welcome to the lunch hour, noon hour of our show. Thank you for joining us. Later this hour, we are going to talk about how the Inflation Reduction Act affects you and walk through some of the things that you can take advantage of, including potentially... getting an electric vehicle.
Ooh.
That a lot of those prices are coming down right now, too. So we're going to talk about that. And then to kick it off, though, we have a very special guest that I'm very excited to have here. But as a little bit of a primer, you know, last month was Human Trafficking Awareness Month, and we had some guests on to talk about that and the prevalence of it in Wisconsin, being that in all 72 counties, we have had cases of human trafficking. And on September 21st, 2021, I made a video trying to raise awareness around the Safe Harbor Bill that was up for, I think, a public hearing, and it was a bipartisan bill. It was the third time it's come to the legislature in trying to... This breaks my brain to say. So in Wisconsin... As a minor, you cannot consent to sex, but if there's money involved, you can be prosecuted for prostitution. Riddle me that. And so, here to talk about exactly this bill, because it is coming up, and it is a bipartisan bill and effort once again to revive this bill, is Representative Jody Emerson, who represents the 91st District up in Eau Claire, and was also an adjunct professor at UW Eau Claire on human trafficking. And so she knows a thing or two about this. Welcome to the show. I can't believe this is the first time we're finally having you on.
Thanks so much for having me, Kristen. Good to see you.
So let's start at the beginning as far as kind of in different words or with more detail what I just said as far as what Wisconsin law says right now on this issue.
Yeah, I think, you know, how you described this kind of sums up Wisconsin politics, really. Like, it makes sense to do it. This is something we actually agree on. So therefore, it's going to take us like a decade to actually get it done because it's good for the state of Wisconsin. So the process of where we're at with Safe Harbor, I think it was either in 2015 or 2017, that session, we actually passed a law. And this was before I was actually in the legislature, that made trafficking of a child abuse. So then you'd think like, well, obviously the next session, we're going to clean this up and make it, you know, illegal for a child to be prosecuted for the child abuse that is happening to them. And now we're, like you said, on the fourth time of making this happen. So 8 years later, we're still fighting the battle. The good thing is, every single time we put this bill out, we get more co-authors, we get more co-sponsors, we get a bigger group of people who are fighting for this. And the last couple of sessions, we've had more than 50% of each chamber willing to fight for this, but somehow it still doesn't end up getting through. So that's where we end up with the Wisconsin politics piece. But
and so with that, because like I said, when I explain this, it feels like it breaks my brain as for who, like how you could not be, how you can see that these two things. And so for the people who do object, because you, I mean, it, even what you just said, as far as the fact that there has been over 50% of each chamber in the different times that this bill has come up have been like, yes, I am on board. And yet somehow it's still not, it still hasn't changed. And so what are some of the concerns or the objections to the people who won't vote for it or who are don't it hasn't clicked for them? And are any of those legitimate concerns?
I think partially it started out where when I think it was the 2015 or 2017 session, we had a big omnibus bill that went through and I was part of the advocating to get that to happen. And we took kind of a deferred judgment piece for juveniles. And, you know, that was the tack that we took then because that's what could happen. I think some people who were in charge of that bill viewed this as usurping their bill instead of being a half a step to where we need to go. So that was a problem. There was, you know, ego gets in the way a lot of times in the Capitol. Surprise, surprise.
No.
It's not surprising, but it's extraordinarily disappointing.
Oh, there's been lots of martinis drank and four-letter words said about this whole process, but... And I have to say, actually, this is the bill that got me into politics. I said, no way in heck was I ever going to be running for office or anything like that. And after battling this for a couple of sessions, I was like, well, if I can't change it from the outside, let's try and change it from the inside. So I don't know, maybe if we get this passed, maybe I'll look at the next chapter in my life. So there's a little bonus for you, Republicans. Pass the bill. I might move on. I don't know.
That is a carrot if I ever heard one.
Right. But I think it was a piece of, you know, some people were saying that, well, this intersect or this usurps my bill. My bill did this and this does something different. And I looked at my bill as being, you know, the halfway in between what we really need to do for children who are charged and are, you know, victims of sex trafficking. And then the other piece of it is that some people are under the mistaken thought that this legalizes prostitution.
Yeah.
And it absolutely does not. So.
And that was because Corey Hass over at Milwaukee Journal Sentinel had written an article talking about how this is coming up again. And one of the things that I forgot who, I don't know if she attributed to a specific person, but one of the concerns being that the idea that for a victim who's a minor, who's in a situation where they are being trafficked for sex, and in the situation right now, if the police were to get involved, they could be prosecuted. But in that situation, there's potential that they get inside the system and can actually get help. And like, it's better. The argument for whoever was making this argument is that at least in this situation, they have access to help versus the situation when they're just kind of like on their own again. And it, my reaction to that is like, but isn't there a different kind of help that we can do than a criminal record?
Yes. And I mean, I call BS on that because, you know, that was maybe okay 8 years ago when we were dealing with this to begin with. And, you know, especially in some counties to say, well, gosh, we don't have any services for these people. So they're safer behind bars than with their trafficker. We could get into a long talk about how that's not right. But even if we give them that argument back then, we've had 8 years then to establish services, to establish things, to establish systems to help people. And I can't think of any other crime where somebody is a victim, where we say, you know what, let's just toss them in jail because we're really just too lazy and don't have the political willpower to set up the systems to help somebody. I mean, if we think of like domestic violence, we would never say, oh, this person who's being abused by their partner is safer in jail than actually doing the work to get the abuser in jail. It just doesn't happen.
And aren't we out of line with, like, there's 30 other states that basically there's a federal, at the federal level, we're out of line with what the law says, and that there's 30 other states that have updated their laws, including our neighbor, Minnesota, to be in line with not prosecuting minors and
children. Like, because it's children.
It's, I saw at the end, it's the average age is like 12 to 14. We're talking, it's not 17 year olds, which again is still a minor and is still a young person who is not. It can be easily exploited, but 12 to 14 year olds,
right?
That's so young.
It's mind blowing when you really dive deep into this issue. It's crazy to think of how we put ourselves into mental gymnastics to okay this as a society instead of fighting to really get at the root cause of this. You know, making sure that we've got good mentoring systems, good education systems, healthy people around, mentally healthy people around, making sure that we've got things for kids to do, teaching them about, you know, how to use the internet and social media safely instead of just going, oh, here's your phone, go ahead. I don't understand it. So, you know, we're all taught about stranger danger as a child, but you don't think about the stranger danger on your phone. And so that's what I did a lot before I was in office, is did a lot of advocacy work, working with kids, working in the juvenile detention center, things like that, to teach kids safe usage of internet and how to keep themselves safe, and thought processes, and teaching adults how to teach their kids critical thinking skills about internet safety too. So, yeah. And when we look at Minnesota, too, and I'm glad that you brought that up, Kristen, because Minnesota, when they implemented their safe harbor, which is a no wrong door model. So any intersection of the system that you come to where you're a victim of this, they saw their prosecutions of traffickers raise immensely. I don't remember the figures off the top of my head.
Lisa, because that's what I referenced in the video that I made. It was quadrupled. I don't know exactly what to watch.
Yeah,
but
it's amazing to think, well, of course, if you're treating a victim like a victim and not like something that you want to lock up, they're going to help you. And that's what we need to get these people behind bars. That's where we really make progress when it comes to criminal justice, not putting these little Band-Aids on things. So,
all right. Well, we are going to keep Representative Jody Emerson through the break and continue to talk about the safe harbor bill, what political will needs to be there for us to get this passed. I know Jane has a question, and also just a little bit more on your background of how, I mean, as you said, this is what got you into politics. And so stick with us. This is As Goes Wisconsin.
As the nose tackle for the green and gold,
1993 to 1999, and again 2001 to 2003,
125 games, 292 tackles, 7 sacks, and a Super Bowl ring. But there's more to life than stats, and there's more to life than football.
You're about to find out.
Under the Helmet with the Grave Digger, featuring Packers legend Gilbert Brown.
Monday mornings at 8 on WISS and WGBW, and on the Civic Media app.
Cardall put out these weird, sad videos interviewing incapacitated elders in their nursing homes that don't have the ability to say, don't use me as your political prop.
If they are what you say they are, then you shouldn't be doing it how you did it.
Yes, it was the kids using the parents as props. Well, my old man hasn't talked since 76. Of course he would have voted for Trump. That's the evidence. Videos. People that can't talk.
It is wrong. So it's absolutely wrong.
Check out the entire podcast library at darnwi.com.
To protect his family from disaster, Steve used his camera phone.
Done.
By taking pictures of his important documents, Steve can always have them stored online. Learn more simple disaster prep tips at ready.gov. A message from FEMA and the Ad Council.
Miss our conversations on air? Join the discussion on our social media channels. Find Civic Media on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. You can also find social media for specific shows and hosts on our website. Go to civicmedia.us.
Here's your updated forecast. Bright sunshine this afternoon with daytime highs approaching 41. Southwesterly winds 10 to 15 miles per hour. Clear skies again tonight, lows around 23. High of 42 tomorrow, mainly sunny. Upper 30s Monday, turning warmer Tuesday with highs in the mid-40s and showers. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Paul Trombley on 98.3 FM and 1100 AM WISS. Right now, 37.
A fresh approach to finding common ground in the Fox Valley. Civic Media.
Back to As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bry. We are talking to Representative Joni Emerson of the 91st District about maybe, possibly, hopefully, finally passing the Safe Harbor Bill in Wisconsin, which would make it clear that minors cannot legally consent to sex. And so any minors who are being trafficked can't get charged with prostitution, and which keeps a lot of people in situations from coming to authorities because their abusers can threaten them that they are going to get in trouble. And so, Joni Emerson, we're so happy to have you. And as we just found out, this is the reason you got into politics. And so, which, again, I would love to ask all of the different representatives, like, what, if you got that pass, is there anything that you would quit for? Because, well, my work is here is done.
Oh, no. See, here's the problem is that in the meantime, I found like 1,000 other problems that the state of Wisconsin has. So while this was maybe top of the list of things that needed to change, I found a whole bunch more. So I don't know. I'll tease them with the carrot that if they pass this bill, I might get out of politics, but I don't see it happening anytime soon. The list of stuff to do long in the state of Wisconsin. So,
Jody, the reluctance of some to pass this measure, as much as it pains me to say it, leads me to believe that some of them believe that 12, 13, 14, and 15-year-olds wake up one day and go, I want to have sex with strangers and make that my living.
You know, I don't want to try and get into the head of somebody who might even think that, because that seems like a scary place to me, how we can justify that. But I think it comes to the difference of how we look at criminal justice. You know, is it that we need to, and this is why I consider myself a criminal justice reform champion, you know, I want to reform the system. I want to make it so that we have a society that arrests fewer people for various things, not that we are building more prisons, making laws tougher, locking more people away and destroying more lives. And so I think, you know, some people look at this and they go, okay, this is the crime of prostitution. Something bad is happening here. We need to lock this person up, instead of taking the tact of why did this 14-year-old get involved in this situation to begin with? What is wrong with their world that they would even become, you know, in a situation where that could be an option for them? And so I guess that's the two different ways that we look at things is, here's a problem, let's lock them up, or here's a problem, what happened so we can solve that for other people. because it is so much easier to get a person happy and whole and healthy and productive member of society if that never happened to them to begin with, versus rehabilitating them from the physical, the emotional, the mental trauma that happens when they're forced to have sex with strangers multiple times a day. It's just, and again, think of a 14-year-old in your life. Think of a 12-year-old. Think of an 11-year-old. And think of them being forced to have sex, being raped on a regular basis. You know, that takes an awful lot of therapy to get them back to a healthy and whole place.
It's hard to even wrap your head around, honestly. And just for clarity, in the state of Wisconsin, minor or not minor, when it comes to the charges of prostitution versus solicitation, which one is harsher? The people who are trying to pay for sex or the people who are charging for sex?
You know, sometimes that depends on exactly what's going on with the DA and okay. exactly what they're charging. I don't have the statute books in front of me, so I don't want to say, oh, this one is, and then have somebody, you know, PolitiFact me tomorrow or something like that. But, you know, there is a lot of leeway that a DA can have. Uh-huh. And that's why we're seeing in some parts of the state, when we do have a minor who is a victim of human trafficking, we're not having some DAs charge them with prostitution. They see them for the victim that they are. However, in some counties, that is still happening. And so that's why we need this statewide approach. Because if you're a victim in Eau Claire County versus Sheboygan County, you should be treated the same, not differently. And I'm not saying Sheboygan County does it wrong and Eau Claire does it right.
No, just using the example. Quick, yeah.
Please don't tweet at me, please.
Well, and finally, I would like to figure out a way to hunt a high note, but I don't know if we can until this bill is passed. But there is a report card called the Shared Hope International as far as how Wisconsin is doing when it comes to trafficking. And how are we doing?
Yeah, so we're failing, actually.
Okay.
Political geeks, policy geeks like me love it when these nonprofits come out with report cards and say, this is what you need to do. This is what other people are doing, you know, and add up all the total and here's your grade. And we see this with various nonprofits and advocacy organizations. And Shared Hope International is a phenomenal organization started by a former congresswoman who is a very conservative person. So, but we agree on a lot of stuff. And Linda Smith has started this organization, and they really dive deep into policy, 100 plus pages for each state each year of what we're doing good and what we're doing bad. And the latest report card from Shared Hope that Wisconsin has is we've gotten an F. And a lot of that comes down to, and this is specifically for child sex trafficking or for child trafficking. You know, it really comes down to the fact that we've given the police a lot of tools to be able to do what they need to do. But what we don't have in Wisconsin is the services to wrap around the victims and protect them and get them safe and prevent things from happening in the first place. And so that's what myself and a lot of other people are going to be working on. And I couldn't leave the show without talking about Representative Billings and Representative LaTanya Johnson, who have been champions on this bill forever and ever and ever. And again, they're the people who got me involved in this. I don't want anybody to think that this is something started. It's totally them. So,
all right. Well, we will link all the information as far as more information on the bill, more information on all of this. Representative Emerson, thank you so much for spending time today. We will definitely have you back. Thank you for
your
work.
Thanks so much. Good to talk to both of you.
All right. When we come back, we'll be back. This is Ask Us Wisconsin.
From Oshkosh to Green Bay and points north, wherever you are in the Fox Valley, count on us to keep you connected, informed, and entertained. Civic Media.
ABC News, I'm Dave Packer. In Turkey and Syria, the rescue effort after that massive earthquake turns to recovery as the death toll rises to more than 25,000. A second object in less than a week shot down by U.S. Air Force jets. This one was traveling over Alaska, ordered down by President Biden. It comes after a Chinese spy balloon was downed after transiting the U.S. The entire city of Flint, Michigan, under a boil water advisory after a water main failed. crews working on a fix, but Mayor Sheldon Neely says estimates show the boil water advisory won't be lifted until Monday at the earliest.
We're going to maintain our testing to maintain the level of quality of water. We want people to have a level of comfort with this as we go through this process.
Flint has been rebuilding its water infrastructure since lead was found in the supply less than a decade ago. The state of emergency in Nevada after a pipeline leak in California shut down a major gasoline supplier to the Las Vegas area. The operator says that leak has now been found. Gasoline to start flowing this afternoon. This is ABC News.
You are never far away from your favorite local radio station. We're always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app, and we invite you to get social with us by following our network's Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook pages. Want even more? CivicMedia.us.
You've got questions about navigating the healthcare system? Kristen Lyerly helps us find answers and discusses other issues at the intersection of healthcare and politics. Hometown Health, Thursday mornings at 7:30 on Up North News Radio.
I was just curious as to why you called it the Paul Revere Show.
The Paul Revere Show is named this way because the poem that we all know, the famous Ride, the poem was written to rally the troops to fight slavery and fight for democracy. And so I named the show the Paul Revere Show because I thought it was the time to get on the air and talk about democracy.
The Paul Revere Show with Mark Thompson. Listen Monday, 7 to 8 p.m., always on the Civic Media app.
I'm looking at the phone lines. I'm seeing some familiar faces. Once in a minute, Gene of Eau Claire.
Well, welcome back, Matt. I really miss you. We've been missing getting woke every morning, but now we'll get woke in the afternoon.
Once in a minute, Andrew of Detroit.
Professor, it's so nice you're back. We missed you during your vacation, and I'm very happy to be in your class for the semester.
Thanks a lot for calling in. I appreciate all my callers.
Tune in to Matt Flynn Direct, Monday through Friday, 3 to 4 p.m.
Get it, slip it, cuff it, check it. Talk to doctor now and share it.
I get it, slip it, cuff it, check it twice a day.
I get it, slip it, cuff it, check it in the morning and before dinner.
I get it, slip it, cuff it, check it, and share it with my doctor. Nearly one in two U.S. adults have high blood pressure. That's why it's important to self-monitor your blood pressure in four easy-to-remember steps. It starts with a monitor.
Now that I know my blood pressure numbers, I talked with my doctor. We're getting those numbers down.
Get it, slip it, cuff it, check it. Talk to doctor now and share it.
Be next to talk to your doctor about your blood pressure numbers. Get down with your blood pressure. Self-monitoring is power. Learn more at manageyourbp.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council, the American Heart Association, and the American Medical Association. In partnership with the Office of Minority Health and Health Resources and Services Administration.
Neil Armstrong waited 6 hours and 39 minutes to step onto the surface of the moon. Jackie Robinson waited 20 months to play his first game with the Brooklyn Dodgers. And even DiCaprio had to wait 22 years to win an Oscar. You can wait until your destination. Don't text and drive.
Visit stoptextstoprex.org. A message brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, Project Yellow Light, and the Ad Council.
A reminder that if you miss any part of today's show, you can always listen to it as a podcast, which you can find on asgoeswisconsin.com or wherever you find podcasts. And as always, you can join the conversation at 844-967-2789. And so, with it is Black History Month, and Wisconsin has a lot of Black history, including being a part of the Underground Railroad. And so we have a rich abolitionist history as far as, especially, you know, the Waukesha Freeman started as abolitionist newspaper.
Well, Freeman, that should be, yeah, I guess, exactly. That should be a hint.
And so we wanted to invite on the executive director of the Milton House Museum in Milton, Wisconsin, Caitlin Kloss, who, because it is the last station in Wisconsin that is open to the public that was part of the Underground Railroad. And so we wanted to hear more about the past and the present of Milton House. So welcome to the show, Caitlin.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me. I'm really happy to be here.
Yeah. And so for anyone who's not familiar with Milton House, what is kind of the background of what it was and what role it played for people who were taking this specific path to get to, I'm assuming, Canada?
Yeah, definitely trying to get out of the United States, especially after the 1850s with the passing of the Fugitive Slave Law, just getting into a free state after that really wasn't good enough anymore. So Canada becomes a big route. So really quick, the Milton House was built in 1844 as a stagecoach inn, so basically like a hotel, by Joseph Goodrich, who moves here from New York. And he starts, as far as we know, he kind of starts operating it as Underground Railroad as soon as he builds it. Our freedom seeker that we know by name comes in 1861, and that's Andrew Pratt. And he comes up from Arkansas. And interesting with Andrew is that he comes in 1861, and unlike most freedom seekers, he actually stays in Milton for about 4 or 5 years before he eventually moves on to Minnesota. So he's unique because he doesn't actually continue on to Canada, but you are right. Most people by the 1850s, if they're on the Underground Railroad, they're most likely trying to get north into Canada. Wisconsin was not a main route on the Underground Railroad. We're a little too far west. Kind of the Great Lakes were a good way to get into Canada. So, you know, like Maryland, I think Maryland has the most Underground Railroad sites still today, but like Ohio, New York, they were much more common routes. But people coming from more like the Arkansas, Missouri area, coming up the Mississippi River, and then they would come east across Wisconsin trying to get to the Great Lakes and head up into Canada. So that's kind of where we play a role in that route.
So that's where, so that's what it would, they would be people coming up from the Mississippi, and then they basically traverse from west to east and go basically to like Lake Michigan.
Yeah. Yeah. Like Milwaukee was a big place, to get to, cause then you could, obviously you're right on the water. People could take, you know, obviously tons of different routes. It's an interesting thing. Cause the Underground Railroad, obviously a lot of it today is we try and piece together like bits and pieces that we have to try and make a whole story. And so it's interesting cause like, we don't even know where Joseph sent the person to next, like that part of history has been lost. So we know people came to him, and then, you know, we assume that he moved them east, but we can't say, okay, then their next stop was X, which is not uncommon for Underground Railroad sites.
Just because
so much of your history, they weren't writing it down, right? Because it was secret. Even after the war, and slavery was made illegal, obviously there's still a lot of racial tension and all that. So still, you weren't like, I helped on the Underground Railroad. That was still something you kind of kept close to your chest. So unfortunately, we just lost so much of that history as people died. They kind of just took those stories with them, unfortunately.
Yeah.
Caitlin, when they arrived here, I mean, and I know, again, you're trying to piece things together without having a lot of documentation about it, but were they moved at night? Did they hide them in wagons under things? Did they, you know, how were people moved from place to place?
So how we think it worked at the Milton House is Joseph's brother Anson had a basically a ferry on a lake just north of Milton, Lake Koshkonong. So if you were traveling like from Janesville and you wanted to go to Madison at that time, the fastest way was on Anson's ferry because he would take you across Lake Koshkonong. So we believe that he would get people off the water, put them in a wagon, most likely kind of have them lay down, and then put stuff on top of them that needed to be delivered to the Milton House, like maybe hay or sacks of potatoes, food stuff. And then the wagon would be driven to the Milton House. And then we had cabins out back that were like the warehouse, storehouse, kitchen. So you would unload all that cargo, and along with the human cargo, they would go into the one cabin that is connected to the Milton House via the tunnel. And they would use that tunnel to go to the cellar of the Milton House, and that's where they would stay until that process was reversed and they were moved on. And since we were a stagecoach inn, we had 25 stagecoaches coming every day, all throughout the day. A wagon pulling up at a random time or, you know, didn't really raise any eyebrows. People are like, oh, okay, they're probably just getting ready for the next, you know, stagecoach or whatever. So it was a very busy place, but it worked as a good cover for what Joseph was doing and moving people.
We're talking to Keaton Kloss from the Milton House Museum over in Milton, Wisconsin. And so kind of moving through history after it was no longer needed because there was no more slavery. What did it take as far as, because as we say, it's the last Underground Railroad station in Wisconsin that you can still tour. And so obviously that insinuates that there were others. But as far as the preservation of Milton House to keep it intact and a place that people can still visit and learn from today, what was kind of, who was in charge of potentially like trying to keep this thing as a historical place that we can go take advantage of learning from?
Well, definitely, I would say a big part of it was the Milton community. And even to this day, members of the community have a very strong sense of ownership of the house and are very supportive of it, very proud of it. And so they definitely played a big part. After Joseph dies in 1867, his son Ezra takes over. He kind of operates it until he passes away in the early 1910s. And then the Goodrich family owns it, but it, over the next, you know, like few years, it just kind of is run. It was a dormitory for the college for a while. Businesses were operating out of it. It just kind of switched hands and all that. By 1948, the building was kind of in disrepair, and actually a portion of it actually collapses. So the Milton Historical Society is developed to purchase the building and basically save it. So they save the hexagon and the first block, which those are the ones, you know, hexagon's very important. That's where the tunnel connects. So they take it over in 1948. It takes them until 1954 to get it put back to a position where it could even be open to the public. And so then since 1954, the Milton Historical Society has owned and operated the building. We are a nonprofit 501c3, so donations and tour revenue and event revenue is how we keep our doors open. So that's always an experience, for sure. And so it took a lot of work, and when we were first formed, like in the 1940s, it was a volunteer organization. And even we were certified as a National Historic Landmark, which a big part of that was because we could prove our Underground Railroad connection was done in 1998. But that was after over a decade of work by volunteers, like doing research, going to conferences all across the country, usually on their own dime, them, you know, reaching out and doing all of this work took at least a decade and a lot of money to get us certified and on the, you know, National Historic Register. So that it's a huge commitment on the time of a lot of really dedicated volunteers, the community. Like I said, when we were becoming a museum in the 1940s, they just kind of put a call out, like, if you have stuff to donate to the museum, to be a museum, please do. So a lot of people donated. People came with their own paintbrushes and helped, you know, paint and clean up from the collapse and everything. And then just all these amazing, passionate volunteers who I'm the only full-time staff member still. We still are so dependent on amazing volunteers, but it's definitely a lot of work, but it's one that we feel is so vital, especially in today's world, to tell this story, this positive story of Black history. And we're very happy to be able to tell it.
And so what was your path to becoming the executive director? I can see, for anyone who's watching the live stream, they can see, but if you're listening, Keaton has a lot of Abraham Lincoln busts behind her and maybe a coffee mug. And so are you a history buff, or what was your kind of path being that you wanted to be the executive director of Milton House?
Yeah, I am a huge history nerd. I've just learned to kind of lean into that at this point. I've always just been really drawn to the Civil War. I have a public history degree from the University of Wisconsin-Whitewater. So basically anything history outside of the classroom. So museums, libraries, national parks, anything like that. Civil War, kind of that 1850s to 1870s. So right before the Civil War, through like Reconstruction's, the area that really interests me. So I got my degree from Whitewater, and then I worked for about 5 years at the Rock County Historical Society in Janesville, which operates the Lincoln Tallman House. It's the only house in Wisconsin that is still standing that Abraham Lincoln ever slept in.
Oh, wow.
So I was there for about 5 years, and then this position came open, and I was lucky enough to interview and get offered the position. And so I just celebrated my 3-year anniversary like 2 days ago, speaking the director. So, thank you.
Congratulations. That's great.
I feel very, very blessed because, you know, Wisconsin, it's not a huge state that has a ton of history museums or history positions open, at least paid ones. So the fact that I've been able to work at two sites in my time period close to me is just really great. And I'm just so excited about all the stuff we have planned for the Milton House.
I just want to say, Caitlin, that, you know, we talk about a lot of news on this show, and there's a lot of bad news, and we try and break things down. But hearing the story of the Milton House and what the community did in banding together to keep it and how that still exists today just makes me feel better about humans. So thank you for that.
Good. Yeah, I know, even like I said, I started right before everything shut down because of COVID, and I would have community members just calling the museum, just how are you? Are you guys okay? Like, what can we do? What do you guys need? We just want to check on you. And so that was, you know, a lot of people, when they got those stimulus checks, they were giving some of that money to us because they didn't necessarily need it, but they knew we did. And so, yeah, I mean, the Milton community is just wonderful. And I agree. It's very heartwarming and encouraging too.
Absolutely. So I do want to get to how people can take a tour and events that are coming up. But quickly, I just wanted to point out your intentional use of the word freedom seeker instead of runaway slave. And so can you tell people why it is important, why words matter, and why you would use that word instead of runaway slave?
Thank you for bringing that up, because I'm a big yes. Words matter. And freedom seeker is what we use because saying runaway, fugitive, anything like that, escape slave, it implies that they were doing something wrong.
Yeah.
And they were not doing anything wrong. Yes, by the laws of the day, it was wrong. But in a human moral standpoint, it was not wrong. They had every right to have freedom, and they had every right to seek that. So I love you technically call them freedom seekers while they're on their journey. When they make it to freedom, then you call them a freedom maker. It also puts the emphasis on what the freedom seeker was doing themselves, because a lot of them did this by themselves or with the help of other blacks. It was their own initiative. They were doing the work. They were and I think that's important. White people obviously helped, but they weren't the key. The formerly enslaved people are the ones that were key in making this decision and making it happen. So saying enslaved instead of a slave, because they weren't, slavery wasn't who they were. It was something that was done to them, but they were so much more than that. And freedom seeker, freedom maker, those terms matter so much.
Yeah. And that's why as soon as you said that, I was like, well, we should probably point that out, because I think there's a lot of people who wouldn't, because that's not how we took history classes, right? And so.
Yeah. And I just kind of normally use that word now. I'll say freedom seeker, and I get people like, wait, what, back up, what are you talking about? So I appreciate you pointing that out.
Absolutely. So before we let you go, it's scheduled tours. So if people want to go see Milton House, if they want to give any of the events that are coming up, what should people know?
So definitely check out our website, which is www.miltonhouse.org. Right now in the winter, yes, we are open for tours. We just need a little bit of advance notice because we have volunteers who graciously come in to do the tours. So we need to schedule with them. Come during the summer, June, July, and August. We are open Tuesday through Sunday, 10 to 4, and you can just walk in. We have phenomenal high school students who give tours during the summer. And on our website, too, you'll see we have a variety of special events, from Civil War days in May to Twilight tours in September to a Christmas Carol play in December. We have stuff happening all year round, so there's all kinds of fun ways to come join. And then, obviously, donations are big to help us operate, and we're always looking for volunteers as well. So a lot of ways to get involved.
Absolutely, and we will link all of that to today's show notes. Keaton Kloss, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
Absolutely. So you can check out the Milton House, go see a tour, donate to them, learn more about them. We will link all of it in today's notes. And when we come back, we'll wrap up today's show. This is As Goes Wisconsin.
Thank you for listening to your local Civic Media radio station on air. Now join us anytime by finding and following our Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram pages. You'll also find social media links for your favorite shows and hosts on our website, civicmedia.us.
I was just curious as to why you called it the Paul Revere Show.
The Paul Revere Show is named this way because the poem that we all know, the famous Ride, the poem was written to rally the troops to fight slavery and fight for democracy. And so I named the show the Paul Revere Show because I thought it was the time to get on the air and talk about democracy.
The Paul Revere Show with Mark Thompson. Listen Monday, 7 to 8 p.m., always on the Civic Media app.
Catch Up North News Radio with Pat Krylo at its brand new time, 6 to 8 a.m. weekdays.
The city of Shanghai started administering an inhalable COVID-19 vaccine. I hear a lot of you saying the same thing I had in my head. I don't know about that.
As long as they're not just crop dusting everyone.
Crop dusting, that's exactly what I think people would be fearful of. I would not trust the Chinese government. I would trust people who really know about inhaling something and the good that it does you. Of course, I'm talking about Dom and Crute.
Self-monitor your blood pressure in 4 easy-to-remember steps. Self-monitoring is power. Visit managerbp.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council, the American Heart Association, and the American Medical Association, in partnership with the Office of Minority Health and Health Resources and Services Administration.
Here's your updated forecast. Clear skies tonight with a low of 23.
Winds out of the southwest, 8 to 15 miles per hour. Lots of sunshine tomorrow. Daytime highs approaching 42. Lows level off around 27 tomorrow night. Overcast. Highs level off around 40 Monday under sunny skies. 44 Tuesday, chance for scattered showers. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Paul Trombley on 98.3 FM and 1100 AM WISS. Right now, 37.
If Friday nights mean fish fries, we're your station. Civic Media for the Fox River Valley.
Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bry. We got Jane Matinair on the board. Good Monday show.
Yeah, we had a great show.
Amazing what sleep will do.
It helps, doesn't it?
It helps. It's also just, you know, you and I sometimes talk about the machine of what are we going to talk about, you know, and each day coming in and the ability to sometimes just sleep and trust that we'll find things to talk about and that you don't have to overprepare. And because last night I did watch The Last of Us.
Are you
watching it?
I'm not.
Ooh.
Is it good? Is it really gory?
It's actually not that gory. I was having this conversation with a girlfriend as we drove to a baby shower this weekend. First of all, the third episode, which was last Sunday, which was Nick Offerman and I'm forgetting the excellent actor who was also in the first season of White Lotus. It was basically in a 1 hour play. The acting, the storytelling, everything was so excellent. And so I think, cause I never got into Walking Dead.
Neither did I.
I don't know if I've ever even seen an episode of Walking Dead and like World War Z and like the swarming nature of zombie things are kind of like meh, but anyone who is a Last of Us purist will remind you that they're not zombies.
Oh, there's something else.
I'm going to get
a mutation of something.
It's a mutation and it's basically the fungi that is taking over. It's like jumped species. It's a real thing, but it infects insects and ants. And what it does to ants is now the sci-fi leap for both the video game and the series, is that it could jump to humans.
Human beings that have been horribly mutated by a parasitic fungus.
Yes.
Known as cordyceps brain infection.
But my friend who is a scientist and a doctor, well, she's not a doctor, but she has her PhD in, I think, biology. We were with them on Friday and she was like, this could never happen. This is not how fungi spreads. And
always someone coming to be a killjoy. Yes. on the TV show.
But people will be they're not zombies, so don't call them zombies. Oh,
okay.
So, but anyways, so in the first two episodes, because there's four so far, certainly there is. It's the same thing if you ever watched Stranger Things or any kind of fantasy sci-fi where the visual effects and the makeup artists and the special effects people and what they've created really give you the ick.
Yeah.
Of like, how did someone even come up with what this creature looks like?
What do you dream about at night?
Yeah. And because truly, Pedro Pascal was the host for SNL this weekend. And I know that I saw a time-lapse video of the SNL the SNL makeup artists and what they create, especially in a week to use once.
Yeah.
Is wild. And they had a time-lapse video of them recreating one of these like heads, because it truly is. It's like fungus that starts growing out of people's heads, except they're still walking around and are violent and whatever. So the first two episodes are a little bit more of the scare jump, like on the edge of your
right,
seat.
Right,
a
right.
Little
tense,
bit,
very tense.
Versus the third episode is almost like an anthology of how it can exist by itself without the main characters that you're watching, and it's beautiful.
I know it's got a huge following.
You could watch, if you don't want to watch the whole episode, the whole season, you could watch just that.
Just the third episode?
To appreciate the performances and the storytelling. And I would recommend doing it because it is that good. And then last night's episode really wasn't, I don't know if we saw any of the infected humans. Sorry for spoilers, but as far as it's really good storytelling, it's really good character driven storytelling. And what I like about it is I think as we're going to get deeper into it, because I'm not a gamer, I didn't play this game, but I think that's why the game was all what I've been hearing and reading is that's why the game was so popular is because of the storytelling.
Oh.
And it's also being hailed as one of, if not the only movie slash TV show that has been able to take a video game and do it well. And, you know, the Tomb Raiders and some of the other games that they've tried to bring to screen
have no plot, basically,
yeah,
or a really thin plot.
I guess it'll be really interesting to see how the new Mario Brothers will be. Chris Pratt should never have been cast to voice Mario. He sounds nothing like what Mario is supposed to sound.
What we hear in our heads, right?
Me, Mario.
Yeah, no.
Like, who is this guy? But I did not think I would like it. And so far, I've gotten to the point of, and HBO just has a way of doing this with their Sunday night shows. I just had this conversation about, you know, when we think of the height of Game of Thrones, because you never really got into that one either.
I did watch it.
You did watch it.
I did.
So it's like the anticipation to each Sunday, because what's going to happen? And I don't know if there's another network, streaming or still on TV, that consistently does it as well as HBO does it, at least for me and my Sunday nights. There has been no other, we call it a channel now, because even though it's HBO Max is streaming, I don't know if there's anything that's, because I was the same way. I don't necessarily think so far House of the Dragon is as good as Game of Thrones was, but I certainly every Sunday was looking forward to what happens next.
Yeah.
And that's, I'm hook, line, and sinker there with The Last of Us now. And Pedro Pascal is top five. He's so dreamy.
Ooh. Oh, well, now I will.
Such a good actor.
Now I will definitely check out the dreamy Pedro Pascal.
But yeah,
I think appointment viewing, that's what it's called. And HBO would be delighted to hear you say that.
But, and we're so not, especially my age and younger, right? Everything is on demand now. Of the streaming all episodes as soon as you sit down and watch Netflix because they release all of it at once.
Mm-hmm.
Going back, because even things that air on primetime on CBS, ABC, NBC, you can go back and watch in a myriad of different ways. So it doesn't feel as pressing, you know, this show, because I know everyone feels that way about this show. They can't wait for 11 a.m. every day.
Absolutely.
You could listen to it as a podcast. And if you miss it, you can go back and, as we say, every single day. If you miss any part of the show, you can go back and listen to it as a podcast. But there's something about that appointment watching of HBO that's still there.
And it's also called the art of the tease.
Yeah.
And that's how they get you. And they get you to come back.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I'll give you this little bit. But then you got to come back if you want to get more.
Trying to think, what's my tease for tomorrow? I'm trying to. What do we have?
Kristen sets herself on fire. Tune in at 11:20, and then we'll tell you why.
Boom! How's that for an ending? All right, stick around for Dueling Tangents with Luke and Brian or the Chad Holmes Show. That this has been As Goes Wisconsin. Thank you for listening. Thank you for calling. Thank you for texting. We will be back at 11 a.m. tomorrow, Tuesday. That's all, folks.
Missed your favorite show live on air? It's easy to find what you enjoy wherever you listen to podcasts, including Spotify, Apple, and Google Podcasts. And we're always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app.
Monday morning at 8, don't miss Under the Helmet with the Gravedigger, featuring legendary Gilbert Brown and Earl Ingram. Football, life, and fun.
Earl, you've been driving a Yugo. They just gave you a brand new Ferrari with turbo boost. So enjoy it, brother.
Under the Helmet with the Gravedigger, Gilbert Brown and Earl Ingram. Monday morning at 8 on Oshkosh Air Support WISS and the talk of Green Bay WGBW.
Up North News Radio is Wisconsin's new choice for progressive talk about important state issues. From the team that brings you the news through social media, newsletters, and here on the radio. I'm Pat Kreitlow. Join me weekday mornings from 6 to 8 a.m.
You're listening to WISS 1100 AM Berlin, W252 DR Oshkosh, and WGBW 1590 AM Denmark, W250 CV Green Bay. ABC News.